Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
I just discovered Matthew McConaughey is doing, I think actually tomorrow at the time of this record, so we could all go to it if we wanted to, is doing a online seminar about how to like live a better life.
Okay.
And it's called Just Keep Living. And he's going to have like Tony Robbins.
I'm pretty sure there was an entire decade of songs that had that message in it.
Yeah.
I also feel like he gave it away in the title. It's like,
oh yeah, yeah, I already know what to do.
Just keep living.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Yeah, I highly recommend you guys check out his trailers for it later, because he's just like, hey, you know what? Just like, I asked my son where he's going, where are you heading out to? And he's like, Papa, I'm going to camp to meet people. And he's like, that's the best thing to do with life, son. Just keep living.
Isn't he like going to run for president or something someday?
Probably. We're already headed. Yeah.
I've heard scuttlebutt that he will.
Wow.
You've heard scuttlebutt?
Scuttlebutt, what yeah.
What does that mean?
It's a Philadelphia expression.
Oh, I've heard it, yeah. It's a pirate term, right?
I'm not just going to let that slide. What the hell does scuttlebutt mean?
It's a pirating term, right? I assume that's where it's... Because scuttle sounds like a shipping thing, so I assume scuttlebutt was like, what's down here in the dredges? We're talking about how the captain's got scurvy.
Scuttlebutt's just like talkins, like you heard somebody talking.
Yeah, it is talkins, but it derives from the part of the boat that would be scuttled, which is the bottom of the ship, the butt of the ship, is where you would hide all the good stuff. So that's where the scuttlebutt was.
Mm.
I made that up. That sounds like a true meaning.
Man, dude, you had me hooked on that.
I was like, oh, interesting. I was about to go tell someone else about that.
Oh God, I'm so glad I saved you guys.
Yeah, the scuttlebutt. Yeah, I knew this for a long time. It's actually the place where they keep all the really nice stuff that they stole in the bottom of the ship.
All the jewels.
Something I knew about for a long time. I read about it in the book, you know.
I actually have the real etymology for it, if you guys are ready.
I would love it.
Sure.
Okay, scuttlebutt in slang usage means rumor or gossip, deriving from the nautical term for the cask used to serve water. So it's literally water cooler talk.
What?
Mm, oh, yeah, okay.
But why butt?
Maybe you sit on it. You sit on the water cooler.
A butt is another name for a cask.
I like Austin's meaning. You sit on your butt and talk.
Yeah, you bring the water cooler out, you get the beers, and you sit on it.
Yeah.
That's how it works in the office. Someone climbs atop the water cooler, and whoever is on top has to tell the story.
I guess I was thinking of not a water cooler, a ice box, whatever you call those things.
A cooler cooler.
Those are coolers. Those are coolers.
Yeah, just a regular cooler.
The true cooler.
Not a water cooler. I don't know if you can sit on a water cooler.
Sitting on a water cooler would be a dominance move, I feel.
Yeah. It's impressive in its own right, for sure. Yeah.
Like Chad said, you then become the court jester of the office. Because you need that height to be able to look down upon everyone and lord over them with your tail, with your scuttlebutt tail.
Actually, if you can climb on top of the water cooler, a lot of mid-level managers have to cede control to you.
That's a little-known hack.
I'm up high. What are you going to do?
Yeah. They're like, all right, I guess you're in charge of payroll now. Good luck.
Try it in your office this week if you work in one. See what happens.
I'll have to buy a water cooler and put it in my room.
Send us pictures. I would love a home water cooler. That's such a rich luxury. I would love that.
Do rich people have water coolers?
Actually, you know what? When growing up, all of the people that I was friends with that were affluent definitely had a water cooler in their house.
All right, we had a water cooler growing up. But we were not
rich kids. Mr. Moneybags.
Listen.
Bet you can find a water cooler for pretty cheap if you're looking in the right places.
Get it off Craigslist, get a cursed water cooler.
I'm pretty sure our town just had awful tap water, and that's why we had it.
Actually, yeah, not to get too real, that's probably more and more relevant as more towns get poisoned water supplies. How are you guys doing in Philly, by the way?
We're
you guys
good. Okay? Our water actually did not get poisoned, but I was very aware of how tenuous our water situation is by that weekend.
Woo. Yeah, it was like a dye or something that was poured in the water.
It was a plastic, or like it was a vinyl, a liquid vinyl.
Oh yeah, it was vinyl.
Good, sure.
Man.
So like we would have turned our guts into little vinyl tubes.
You know, it's never super soldier serum that they dump in the water. It's never a train full of that.
Or like a giant pack, like a Kool-Aid truck, like just the packets.
Can you imagine?
Right? Like, hey, this weekend, everyone gets great Kool-Aid.
I was going to say, if like mango water was just pouring out of your sink, it'd be delicious.
Now that's what I would do if I was rich. I'd set up different faucets that had different flavored waters.
You'd have, okay.
Fuck the water cooler. Here's my grape sink. Here's my peach sink.
Austin, I thought you were going to say that if you were rich, you would go to water treatment plants and then treat the entire community's water with flavor. I thought you were going that
Congratulations.
Far.
Congratulations. Hope you like mango.
That's a power move. That's because, you don't want to go to someone else's house and them not have mango water. You want to make sure that wherever you go, you're taken care of.
Yeah,
I like the idea of unwanted philanthropy. Like,
that's a pretty funny concept. You're welcome, everybody.
We didn't want this. Go away.
I'm trying to make spaghetti. Oh,
Oh, hello, everybody. Well, we should probably introduce who we're talking to here.
Welcome to Goosebuds.
Welcome to Goosebuds. I'm Paul.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Chad.
And we have a guest with us today. Austin, hi.
What's up? How are you guys doing?
We're delightful. Luckily, I haven't dealt with anything cursed all day.
Or haunted, or whatever the case may be.
Nothing evil?
No evil thing.
Nothing that's very
nothing
evil?
Nothing so evil. It tells you over and over again how evil it is.
Nothing that has declared itself as evil yet.
Today, we read the delightfully titled The Haunted Car by Carl Stein. And
should have been called the evil car, let's be real.
Yeah, you know, that was really the operative thing happening here. If it was haunted benevolently, that'd be fine, but
and it kind of was
the morally ambiguous car, at least.
Let's start with this. Austin, you have just recently read Goosebumps books, right?
Yes,
for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god,
I had a bunch of friends who were always constantly making YouTube videos about Goosebumps this, Goosebumps that, and I remember seeing Goosebumps in the library, like they had the big sections for it and stuff, and I was super interested in it, but I was not allowed to read it, so I was unfortunately one of the people who was missing out on that type of book. I mean, I couldn't even read Harry Potter as a kid, so
okay, gotcha.
Goosebumps was really off the table.
Was that your parents making that call?
Yeah, it was.
It's funny, we had Ian on Brutal Moose recently, who also I believe was not allowed to read Goosebumps books as a child.
Well, we were raised in about the exact same area.
Oh, okay.
We went to the same college. I actually met him because I opened the door for him. So it doesn't surprise me at all. I know we both had religious families. So
this has a touch of naughty subversiveness for you.
I don't think I really felt it that felt the naughty subversiveness in my at age 32 reading Goosebumps. But, you know, if I really had thought about it, maybe I could have role played as I'm like sneaking the book into my room as a kid reading with a flashlight. I should have done that, honestly, now that I'm a little disappointed I didn't.
Having read them now, do you think you'd be a different kid? Do you think it'd be a different life trajectory you would have gone down if you had read Goosebumps?
It's hard to say. I'd have not with just the haunted car. Maybe not with this one.
No, you certainly would not have become a car boy from this one. And none of us are car boys, I don't think, right?
No.
Not particularly.
Not really, no.
I'm not anti-car or anything. I'm just saying, you know.
I had friends that were car boys, for sure.
Yeah, I smile if I see a Mustang. That's pretty much it. That's about as far as car guys I get. Yeah,
that's nice.
I don't mean to brag, but I drive a Honda Fit, so I'm pretty much a car guy.
So there is something that we wanted to talk about with you, Austin, that we actually talked about doing an episode of Arthur.
Yes.
The aardvark. Yeah.
The aardvark boy.
Yes. What happened, if I recall, is that you hit me up and you were like, did you know the Goosebumps author R.L. Stine wrote an episode of Arthur? And I was like,
I did not know
that, but I knew exactly which episode it would have been just based on that.
Uh-huh.
But apparently, correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't write the episode. That's what it seemed like once I looked it up.
No, we were sold a false line. We were told that he had written an episode, but we were lied to. I actually don't know if we were lied to. There might have been a cross line somewhere, but we did approach you with it. And I remember you said, wow, I know what episode it is. And then you responded back later and you said, I don't think this is right. I think you were. Yes.
I looked it up and I was so confident of what the episode was when you said that. Well, so, I mean, if you tell me something, Paul, I trust it.
Thank you.
Believe it.
Like the scuttlebutt.
Yeah, exactly. Like scuttlebutt, which everybody knows what we're talking about. So I eventually did look it up and I could not find anywhere that R.L. Stine had written an episode of Arthur. Apparently, he and Mark Brown were friends, though, and did do some collaborative works or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did some, like, picture books, it looked like.
Yes. Maybe that's where that rumor stems from.
Yeah, and R.L.'s in an episode. I've never seen Arthur. So, like, and I think how it's explained to me, Austin, is you were, like, the Arthur scholar, is how Paul, who I also trust with everything.
I don't know if scholar is a earned title, but I'll take it anyways.
You've earned that.
Appreciate it. I am the number one Arthur YouTuber, I think.
But there is an episode RL's like voice acting in Arthur, right? Like,
well, yeah, because there's a lot of celebrity appearances in Arthur, Mr. Rogers, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me that he was in an episode.
Putting R.L. Stine next to Mr. Rogers is a really interesting juxtaposition.
They were both famous children icons, just for in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. One is pure good and the other is R.L. Stine.
One tells truth, one tells lies.
Yeah.
The episode that I did assume that it was, and maybe some people in your audience might be interested in watching this, there is an episode where an author creates a book series that's really popular. It's a horror book series. It's basically Goosebumps.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And one of the character's parents tries to ban the books, essentially. And then it, you know, turns out that he actually reads the books too, and something, something. I don't know. It's like it ends up being a happy ending. I thought for sure that had to be the episode that was written by R.L. Stine.
That's kind of cool, having an episode about a book banning kind of thing. Like, that seems kind of relevant.
Kind of need a little more. Need a little bit more of that nowadays, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a little. You could probably make that relevant at almost any point.
That's true.
It was also fairly relevant at the time because people wanted to ban. Like, well, the Goosebumps books and possibly Harry Potter. I can't remember if they came out at the same time or not.
Right.
I'm a little depressed. Considering it's an issue that we've known about for a while, it hasn't really stopped.
Austin, do you remember, perchance, what the name of the pseudo Goosebumps books were in that episode of Arthur, to put you on the spot?
The Scare Your Pants Off books.
Oh! All right.
Yeah, I like it. I can dig it.
It was a little satanic panic going on.
A little bit, yeah. And then, if I recall, it turns out at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, there actually was ghosts that were haunting the mansion or whatever.
Okay, I'm convinced that RL had at least some notes for the episode then, if that's really what happened.
Yeah, that's part of what I was so sure. That might be a two-part episode, I can't recall. But because I think it's the first episode is the book banning, type situation, and then everyone's down with the books and they're having like a Halloween party and it's haunted, and then it turns out at the end, the twist is that there actually was a ghost, but nobody realizes it. They think it was fake.
Got it.
And I thought it had to be one or both of those if R.L. Stine wrote Arthur episode, but alas.
Was that your first experience with R.L. Stine, or had you read a Goosebumps before that?
Well, apparently he didn't write the episode. So.
Well, no, just like ever him being around you in spirit. You know what I mean? Like the essence of it.
I didn't know who R.L. Stine was at the time watching it, but I was cognizant that it was supposed to be Goosebumps, for sure.
But then you ended up reading some.
I did. I started to read the Bumblebee one. I went to Half Price Books and I grabbed some. I still plan on reading the other two as well.
Okay,
that I haven't gotten to yet.
My Life as a Bee, I believe?
Yeah, he turns into a bee. I can't remember exactly what the title of it was.
Why I Am Afraid of Bees. Wow, I just totally blew that one.
Wow.
That's what it was.
Okay, we have read that one. That was number 17 in the original series of like 100 books. So we probably read that about 8 years ago.
Right.
And I don't remember much about it.
It's about time you read it again. It's definitely the best one, I'm sure. Kids are scared of bees, you know? That's what's really scary.
I feel like every once in a while on our Discord, people are surprised if we don't remember something from one of the episodes. Like, we have to dump this out of our brain to make space for new ones.
You know,
we're like Sherlock or Taskmaster, if you prefer a Marvel comparison. We only have so much storage. We have to dump other things.
I have to clear RAM after a book is done.
I definitely feel that. I'll have a kid will walk up to me at a convention and they'll be like, remember in this video when you said this? I'm like, no, it was like 8 years ago. I do not remember that. But, you know, you have to pretend like you do, you know. Oh, yeah. That was great.
Your videos are different in that you're a little bit more spaced out than ours, but people talk about continue videos, which we put out every week.
Mm.
And I'm like, there's no way I remember anything. I don't even remember the games we play. I look at them and I'm like, I didn't play that. There's nothing in my brain.
Yeah, I did daily Let's Plays for a few years as well. Yeah. And I would have people point at, remember Pikmin episode 13? No.
I think if you're the kind of person who makes wikis and stuff, like that reinforces your memory about the thing. Like you're looking for notable things. When the mic's on, you're just looking to survive, all right? If you get out on the other side, like all good, but you're in fight or flight mode.
Yeah, exactly. I like looking at it like that. I'm gonna look at it like that from now on.
I'm gonna start like warming up as if I'm gonna box before I put a mic on in front of me from now on. It sounds fun.
No fluids. You get to eat one tomato before you podcast.
Like you're about to freestyle. Should we talk about this haunted car book a little
bit? Let's turn the key.
Yeah, let's get some meat off of this haunted car bone.
Shut up and drive, as Rihanna always said.
Or as the tagline of this book says, ghosts, start your engines.
Or as the tagline of this book says, vroom vroom, I'm a car / ghost.
for a split second, I was like, did the book start like that? I don't remember. Oh, okay, never mind. I don't know what it is. I'll just believe anything that Paul says.
Thank you.
You have a very trustworthy voice.
You want to believe him.
I'm glad my decades of practicing lying have gotten through to you and have worked on you. Thank you.
So Mitchell Moynihan is 12.
He sure is.
And he likes cars.
He sure does.
His personality is cars, 100%.
He has one trait, and it's likes cars.
It's cars.
He's got a Chevy Impala. He's got a Firebird V8. He's got a Camaro. He's got doubles and triples of those because triples is best.
Triples is best. Triples is safe.
He's got all of them. He's got models on the wall. But this little kid, he doesn't know what a car is actually like. He's 12.
No, but he is also, in addition to being a car master, he's a self-described legend.
I forgot that he mentioned that.
He legitimately calls himself a legend.
He's never known. That's never brought back up again, why he was a legend.
And no other kids around him, of which many that we see many, many children, no one calls him a legend in person. We never hear that.
No one bows to him or anything and goes, oh, it's the car god.
I guess that's why it has to be self-described, you know? If no one else is going to give you the credit, you got to give it to yourself.
It'll catch on.
I don't like spending time with Mitchell. He's not my favorite Goosebumps protagonist ever.
No.
But I do relate to being young and trying to find your thing. Like, even if it's not a very good thing, you're like, hey, I can tell which car is coming around, even if I'm not looking at it. Like, I guess I'm a car guy.
It is good that he recognized he has a skill and he's like, well, lean into it.
They say kids spend their young lives trying to fit in. Adults spend their adult lives trying to stand out.
Oh, damn.
Huh.
I always felt kind of the opposite. Like, I'm always trying to fucking stand out. I'm always trying to showboat.
Oddly enough, and this is going to sound like a joke, Kevin has been saying, I'm going to stand out this year. You've said that many times to me.
I have, yeah. This is my year of showing up.
That's not a joke. That is a true thing that Kevin said.
I'm trying to strut my stuff this year.
Yeah, well, next year you'll have to describe yourself as a legend.
Maybe that's what takes it. Yeah, fake it till you make it. Just yell yourself as a legend and people are going to start following into it.
Well, I have to ask you guys a question real quick.
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
Have you guys ever been so excited about something that in the process of being excited about it, you smeared spaghetti sauce all over your face?
Oh my God.
Just wondering, because I'm not sure if I'm living a happy enough life. I've never done that.
Austin, I love that moment because Mitchell is so excited that he reverts into a 2-year-old. He goes back, he de-ages 10 years in the span of an afternoon.
I wrote that moment down, but I think what I was more taken by was the accuracy of the 90s all-carb dinner. Just like spaghetti rolls.
Yep.
With a big old glass of juice, baby.
It's the biggest part of the food pyramid. Yeah, you need all of it.
Yeah, you need...
Now,
if they were
living in Austin's world, they wouldn't have had to have the juice on the side. It would have been baked into the spaghetti. Those absolute fools.
The delicious purpley goosebumps appropriate noodles.
Yeah, because purple's a scary color. You know, as much as Mitchell's kind of a, I don't know.
A dinkus?
He's a bit of a dinkus. You know who I love? I love his brother, Todd.
Okay.
You love him? I literally wrote down how much I didn't like him.
Well, as far as little brothers who are kind of bring up, like, you know, false leads about seeing ghosts and stuff, this is a pretty standard character, so there's not much there. But I just liked the Todd. This kid is, what, probably like 10, 8? I don't know. I don't know if they said it is 8.
Not sure.
But he's rocking an X-File shirt.
Yeah.
And he solemnly says on page 7, the truth is out there.
This is not like a great family. I just want to say, like, the dad has anger issues.
Without
and
a doubt.
Ends up destroying his family's home.
Incompetence issues as well.
Without a doubt. I was going to say, he has anger issues. In addition, he is a danger to everyone around him and himself.
Yeah, you can only be one. You can only be incompetent or a danger to everyone around you. You can't be both.
I like the kind of combo of little boy who is always looking for signs of ghosts and the combo of the dad who is making so many broken things in the house that is causing false evidence of ghosts. Like,
yeah,
the bookcase keeps falling down because dad put it up wrong, but it's giving Todd all the ammo he needs.
I feel like a 7-year-old wearing an X-Files shirt in the 90s is kind of like seeing a 7-year-old wearing a Game of Thrones shirt in the nows.
You should not be watching that.
Yeah, that's not for you, dude.
I do want to ask. So in the beginning of the book, Mitchell describes himself as a legend and a car aficionado. Yeah. And then he says about his brother, Todd. He says, Todd, I don't know what Todd is into. And... I don't know about you guys, but instantly I was like, Todd likes video games. And then the next thing we get a description of what Todd is doing, and it's playing video games.
Every time.
And I picked it up. I was like, Todd's into video games, and his brother is too quote-unquote cool to realize that video games are way sicker than cars.
He's making car models, which I would argue is a dorkier thing than... Somehow making like a car model is dorkier than making a Gundam model in my head.
I was listening to the Final Fantasy VII remake soundtrack the whole time I was reading this, and it really improved the experience. But like when Todd's playing video games in the other room, Crazy Motorcycle kicked up, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. He's playing Final Fantasy VII.
It could be. It's very possible in the timing of this book. He was probably playing that.
Planet's dying, Cloud.
We need more cars.
I may have read into this a little bit too much, but did the book insinuate that Todd was the main character's illegitimate brother?
Wait, what? Oh, right. Yeah, no, you're so right.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Where?
So, Austin, you haven't read a ton of these. Every time that RL likes to describe what a character looks like, he pretty much leads with clothing. It's always clothing. And Mitchell describes his brother Todd as, he's so skinny and blonde and pink. And those are the only words he uses to describe it.
Well, later he talks about how gross he is. While he's like having a conversation, eating cereal. And during the conversation, it keeps interrupting with the main character. I keep reading Mitchell's thoughts about how gross Todd is the entire time in between, just scattered through. milk like falling down his face. So he's skinny, he's pink, and he has milk just like spilling all across his body.
He's dribbled with milk. He smells of stale milk.
He's basically a naked mole rat with a Hanson Brothers haircut.
But to clarify, you were saying that it's because that Todd is described as having a different hair color, kind of like Joffrey in Game of Thrones, take back to Game of Thrones, right?
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah, blonde hair is the signifier that ain't Baratheon, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't. I was wondering if it would play into the story at all. Turns out it didn't.
No.
I thought maybe I picked up on some crazy thing. Oh, it turns out that his brother actually is some... No, that wasn't it. I read into it.
Wouldn't it be cool if RL made something like that actually tie back in? Wouldn't that be a great thing?
Yeah. His brother actually turns out to be the ghost.
That would be
like,
sick.
His parents are like, are you a brother? You don't have a brother. That should have been what it was.
We know from the minute we meet their new friend, who we're going to get to in a little bit. I believe her name is Marissa.
Oh, yeah, Marissa.
Yeah, just so happens to show up during every time the car goes crazy.
Marissa appears.
It's a little obvious that she's showing up whenever the car goes crazy.
And there is still another twist to come after that, but it's pretty obvious. It would have been nice for RL to sneak one around on us with X-Files Todd, but I don't know. Todd just wants to believe, and I'm with him. He should, you know, like, let him believe in the ghosts and the spooks. And I wrote down this quote, and I don't remember who said it. I think it was Todd. And it's just, ghosts always do mischief. And I just wrote that down. It's just what they do. I don't know the context for it. I should have probably put some context in there. But I do love those words. I love those words a lot.
Seems a bit prejudiced against ghosts.
I agree.
Yeah. Maybe you only notice the mischief because it's chaos. Like, as far as we know, maybe ghosts are, like, tying our shoes for us when they come untie and we don't know it. You know, think little tiny blessings.
Yeah, the little...
Ghosts are tinkering with the slot machine, getting you the jackpot.
Yeah.
I shudder to think of this country without hardworking American ghosts tying people's shoes at all times.
Keeping America going.
So, this book, you know, sets us up, right? We've got the family.
Yeah.
We've got Todd, the ghost-fearing brother. They've moved into, recently, a new... spooky house on a hill that overlooks a town, the name of which I cannot remember, and it doesn't matter.
Hunter Hill.
Hunter Hill. They've moved into this new town in a spooky house.
Sorry, the town is Forest Valley. The hill they are on is Hunter.
Okay,
Hill.
Got
this
it.
Doesn't matter.
It
no true. One cares.
It truly does not matter
for the archivists.
Yeah, yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. For people who are fact checking.
For the some wild genius has probably built a like national atlas of Goosebump books with like top topography and like elevations tracked to it.
We don't even know where we are really. They moved from, I thought they moved from Topeka or something like that. And I don't know where they're located currently, but yeah, to not get bogged down in the weeds, we're trying to get to inciting incident. There's a fun scene early on where the brakes are cut in Dad's car when he's riding with Mitchell, and they crash into a tree, which would probably be a deadly crash if this weren't the beginning of a Goosebumps book.
Yeah. I gotta say, pretty bold move to use car-based true horror. And I think this book is filled with not actual scary ghost moments. It tries, and it's you know, it swerves close to some horror, but it does not ever hit. The scariest parts are...
Nice fall.
Thank you.
I'm going to die in the car crash. I'm going to die.
This car crash is so real. And like, how many times does Mitchell smash his head into a ceiling, door, or dashboard of a car in this book?
Several times. I think
a lot of drama.
The main horror of this book stems around a thing that you don't understand, that is dangerous, that you just have to trust when you do a thing, it will do the thing you want. Like, there's a lot of scenes where he hits the gas and nothing changes, or he hits the brake and it goes faster.
Right.
It's like, you know the thing is supposed to work a certain way, but you don't know how the thing works. For all of Mitchell's, like, car legend status, he doesn't demonstrate any knowledge about engines. He just kind of knows makes and models of cars, so
he kind of knows what any kid who's played one car racing video game understands about cars.
Right. Yeah. Right. He certainly considers himself a legend of cars, but cars do not respect Mitchell.
No. And after the crash, like, it's kind of like viscerally real where his dad like stumbles out
and vomits
and then like he just pukes. It's like, and then Mitchell asks in a really like slapsticky kind of moment, so are we getting a new car now?
I took note of that moment as well because of the seriousness, because they like, they're like, oh, we okay, everyone okay, and dad like gets out of the car and falls to his hands and knees and vomits, and then Mitchell does that line, and I was like, I guess we're, it's like a Marvel undercutting of a very Marvel movie undercutting of a very serious moment with a joke.
I was so proud of RL at that moment, because that's like, he did comedic timing right.
Uh-huh.
Like he did a juxtaposition. Like, dude, you did a literature. You did one literature in this book.
As I had only read the Bumblebee book before this, for a split second, I was like, obviously the main character is not going to die. I don't think it was going down that direction. I was like, is Dad or Todd might be dead here.
That's an interesting thought though, Austin, because like we had a car and we potentially almost had a ghost to haunt it. So that could have been the setup to the haunt.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was subconsciously partially what I was thinking. Like maybe Todd is actually the ghost or something. I kept wanting Todd to become this character that was like super vital to the spookiness of the story, but kind of didn't really pay off like that.
No, most of the kids, the little brothers or sisters, are just there for a couple chapters of like, I sicked a dog on you, haha, like little jump scare fake.
Yeah, right. And in the Bumblebee one, it was like, wow, you're so lame. The sister is just way not as lame as the Bumblebee kid.
That's pretty much the sole purpose of any child's like siblings in these books, is to be lame.
To emphasize a very specific point.
Right.
Or story narrative.
A lameness foil, if you will.
Yeah.
So they almost die, but thankfully Mitchell's wishes are granted and a new car is coming out of this deal, and Mitchell is ready to rock. He gets into this newspaper and he's circling different cars and he finds a great deal, which with a mention of name your own price, to which, okay, here's a, you know, we were talking about words we don't, or phrases that we don't really know the meaning of. Dad calls it a come on, which is a very different thing to me. I don't know that I've ever heard the so like a, like I guess a false advertisement can be called a come on. Did you guys ever hear that before?
This moment didn't stick out to me enough to remember.
Vaguely, I guess I always interpret that phrase as like it's a come on in that, you know, you finally go to that person or whatever who's leading you along.
Uh-huh.
And then when the other shoe drops, you're gonna be like, oh, come on.
Oh, I see. You're like, oh, come on. I get it now.
Ah, come on, man.
Is this a dad thing that I didn't know about?
I don't know. There's a lot of good dad stuff in here. I actually really like the dad character for just being not just a klutz, but like he's killing himself constantly.
Yeah,
I kind of like this dad.
He's a danger to himself and everyone around him.
Yeah, imagine if Tim from Home Improvement, Tim Taylor,
yeah,
was like, when he accidentally, you know, fires himself into a bunch of drywall, you're like, I think Tim just died.
Isn't that how that show ended? I thought maybe I'm misremembering.
It was a very special episode.
The very special episode might have been that Tim finally got killed by a bunch of, like, he made a super lawnmower and it ran over himself.
I thought Wilson came over and shot him with a gun.
Now I want to watch this show again. It sounds a lot more interesting than I remember.
So they go to this house, Mr. Douglas's house, who is selling this car.
He's from the Creepo Depot, if I'm being honest.
You think so?
Yeah, I just pictured him super disturbing looking based on the description. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, he's wearing a flannel and coveralls and, you know, that, or overalls, and, you know, that's fine. That's a cool look.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's described as like his eyes are really blue and small and he's got a permanent O mouth.
What's the O mouth about? What is that? Can you guys picture that? Because I could not picture anything.
I just pictured him making an O with his mouth at all times, and that's weird and off-putting.
He doesn't, like, he's so chill that he doesn't feel it necessary to close his mouth around others. I thought he was pretty sick, honestly. I like the guy.
Nothing to hold back is what you're saying. Nothing to hide.
Also loves bacon.
Who doesn't?
He smells like bacon, which is a good smell, I think, so...
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not if a person smells like it.
No, probably not smelling like it, but I was referring to the opening. They're talking about the scene where, yeah, they show up at this guy's house, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, Mitchell smells cooked bacon going on in the kitchen, which I just thought was worth stepping out for a second and that, you know, thinking about where what is actually happening in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
What we know is, like, I put out a paper listing to basically put a cursed car in some other people's hands.
Right.
I have a lot of emotional baggage attached to this car, which we'll delve into. God, I really need some fucking salted pork right now.
You know, I wonder if that was supposed, this is maybe giving Arl too much credit, but I wonder if that was supposed to be a hint about Marissa.
Oh, like burning flesh.
No, I mean, like,
that's, oh, like burning flesh. Yeah.
There was someone else in the house, so he could leave the bacon unattended.
Yeah, someone had to be cooking it.
Yeah.
Because bacon will burn up real fast.
Exactly. So. You have to monitor that bacon.
You guys don't just, like, walk away from your stove and just let it cook for a while?
Yeah, when the smoke stops, that's when it's ready.
I like to look at bacon in the morning. I like to hyper-focus on it.
I agree. It gives you something to love in the morning.
Thank you for doing this bacon detour with me. I just wanted to really call out that moment.
You're welcome.
Interesting detail.
And I'm glad you brought up Marissa, because we'll get to her soon, but I didn't, like, even when I found out that she lived with Mr. Douglas, spoiler alert for later in the book, I did not expect her to, it never, like, clicked. It never really made sense to me that she lived there. So it's interesting that you say that this is actually, like, a little bit of a sneaky detail that RL put in there to kind of, you know, maybe give us a little bit of a hint.
Yeah, this whole scene, it, like, gains a lot of context when you know how the book ends, because what you think is happening is he's selling them a haunted car, because all you know at this point is the book's called The Haunted Car. And so when there's this kind of fucked up moment where Mitchell says, I can drive in 4 years, and Mr. Douglas kind of, like, looks away and bites his fist.
Oh my God, I hadn't thought about that. Jesus.
Yeah, that moment stuck out to me too. It's like, oh, this is looking a little sus.
He starts to cry. Yeah.
He starts to cry. And I'm like, is he conflicted about killing a kid with a haunted car? That's, like, really fucked up.
That's how I read it.
Yeah, like, he's gonna be a murderer in 4 years. He's like a piece like,
well, I think that's your that's the initial thing you're supposed to read it as, like, this guy's feeling guilt over passing a curse.
Right.
But he's not. He doesn't know the car's haunted. He's mourning
Becca.
Becca, who, his evil daughter.
Yeah, very evil. We're going to get to it, but I love that Becca's sister calls her evil after she's been dead for, like, a year or something. Yeah. Like that.
Well, apparently she was right. I just envisioned that's all she ever said when she was alive.
I mean, it's all she says as a ghost, so you're probably right. So yeah, he tears up and he's like, I can't take it anymore. Look, I've got the notary public here in my house. We will sign the paperwork and get this taken care of. Please take this car off my hands for $5,000.
$2,000.
So who knows what that is.
I was a little annoyed that he did, you know, to be honest, he did actually give a bit of a come on, because he had said, name your price. And then now he's like, well, how about $5,000? I can't believe the dad didn't go, well, how about $200?
Dad did give in. After Dad talked a big game about not buying anything that day, he did go for the first offer when he probably could have, with the tears and the sadness that man was showing in front of him, probably could have
played into it. So, yeah.
I
don't know about your guys' parents or any of your role models that teach you how to, like, my dad put a lot of rules about when you buy a car, you have to, like, neg that seller real hard. You have to, like, show no emotion. The fact that while they're looking over this car and Mitchell's just like, wow, it's so cool. I did that one time when I was a kid and my dad pulled me aside. He's like, shut the fuck up. We don't like this car. So I thought we did. He's like, no, we want the seller to, he didn't say fuck, but he basically
of course, of course.
And, you know, he's like, yeah, we want to make it seem like we're not interested. Don't help him. And, like, yeah, Mitchell's blowing it for Dad in terms of negotiation.
Here. Like, literally cartwheeling, about to break his spine on the yard.
He's doing cartwheels around the house.
You guys ever been so excited you cartwheel? I can't say that I have.
Not lately.
Luckily, I'm not sure how it would go.
Could be dangerous, depending on the circumstance.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't bought a haunted car anytime recently, so maybe I would get very excited and cartwheel if I bought one. I'm not sure. They end up buying the car, though. They buy it, they go for it, they bring it home, and this is when Mitchell reverts into a I don't know what happens to Mitchell here, but he is slathering spaghetti sauce all over his face at dinner.
Loss of motor control.
Maybe the ghost is inside of him already a little bit.
He just keeps saying, vroom, vroom, I want to go. Like, yeah.
I'm a vroom, vroom boy. Yeah, he says that over and over again at dinner. And
that was my favorite part.
That was
I'm a vroom, vroom boy. That was the best. I put my bookmark on that page to go read it again later.
I underlined that part. It was definitely, I'm going to come back and read that a couple more times.
He's so excited. He's so pumped that they have a cool car now, because the car, like, he all but sings Grease Lightning as he sneaks outside to go sit in the car.
Yeah, he can't. He's looking out longingly at the car, which is beautifully framed in light and glistening. And it's like a winter's eve with a cloudless sky. And he goes outside to the car, and the car, have any of you guys seen the trailer for the movie Skinamarink?
I've seen Skinamarink.
Yeah. Okay. In the trailer, there's this creepy voice that says, in this house.
Yes.
In this house. Yes. And it's very creepy. The car speaks to him, and I heard it in that voice.
Oh, that's so much scarier. But side tangent, can't believe after seeing some Skinamarink, they never say in this house
what?
In the movie.
Yeah. That's the scariest part of the trailer.
It was.
I like what's happening here with Mitchell sneaking out to, like, you know, just kind of have some alone time with the car. And I'm like, yeah, when you're a kid, materialism is super cool. Like, getting a cool new thing.
It is.
It rules.
Like, just sitting and being near the material feels nice.
You haven't read Fight Club yet to question your idea of capitalism.
Yeah.
Or like when you're driving home from like Babbage's and you have like the game, but you can't play it yet, and you're just looking at like the packaging and the manual and all that.
That's why we like smells of things. Like the smell of magic cards is like,
oh yeah,
is like a little commercialism drug that I can take that takes me back to that time.
We just want to be in the commercialism as much as possible.
Yeah. You helped me realize now that, like, when I was a kid, whenever the few times my dad got a new car or, like, you know, a new used car, it was like, oh, it smells so cool. Look at the leather so clean. And now anytime I get a new car, I'm like, this has to be well preserved. And I'm anxious now. I'm anxious about keeping this in good condition.
And Chad, you're getting new cars constantly. Like, they're
You know what? I'm like Steve Jobs, where I just get a new car every 6 months because I don't want to have a license plate. You guys know about Steve Jobs?
No, I actually didn't know that about Steve Jobs.
He hated having license plates on his car.
So he just wanted the paper?
Yeah, or like he didn't even want. There's some law in California where if you've had the car for less than 6 months, you don't have to put a license plate on it. So he just kept buying or leasing new cars every 6 months.
Yeah, when you buy a car, you get that little piece of paper, the registration. You put it in your back window before you get your
thing. Yeah, I assume he just ate the paper.
Hey, I think we can all agree that's super relatable.
Why we love him. It's why we all worshiped his products.
We all do it all through diet, just like him. He was really the best.
Yeah, and then our first scare happens. Austin, do you want to walk us the first encounter with the ghost?
Well, I don't know if I could do it quite as well as you guys, but he gets in the car, and it's like, I found it interesting when he was getting in the car, he keeps being like, I'm not doing it, but I am doing it. It's like I'm making... It just almost, I know it's supposed to be like the ghost that is making him do it, but in my head, I kind of read it as like just an excuse. Like, oh no, he really wanted to get in the car. So he's like, oh, it's making me. I kind of agreed with the parents, I think, to an extent that it was actually him doing it. Uh-huh. But yeah, this is the first incident when he gets in the car, and it's not the one where it gets cold.
Is it the first one
where he goes on the crazy joyride where he almost gets in a wreck?
This first one, he gets locked in, right? This one actually like kind of escalates a little bit where he's just kind of locked in the car and he hears like a girl's laughter, I think.
Okay, yeah, you're right. It was the cold one with his friends that happened after that.
Oh yeah, that one was wild.
And then he's rescued by a Hot Topic goth.
That one wasn't really, I wasn't really afraid at this point. There were parts of the book where it was scary, where like you guys mentioned earlier, when they're in like about to get in a car crash or whatever.
Right.
No, I didn't find the, oh no, I'm locked in. I was like, oh, okay, well that sucks. You'll have to sleep in the car tonight, I guess.
You'll have to sleep on those comfortable leather seats. Oh, well.
He clearly wanted to anyways, so.
The stakes for me were a little bit low. Like, you're locked in, you're in a heated garage, the car's not running, so there's no danger. Most your parents are going to come out in a couple hours and be like, where's Mitchell? Oh, okay.
No, he's laying in the car that he's in love with. Got it.
Yeah.
I think you're kind of right, Austin, where it's like almost like, oh no, I'm locked in the car. I can't get out. Too bad. And he's just lying to himself.
Yeah, I mean, he did just smear spaghetti sauce on his face in this car a little while ago. So I did have a hard time believing the ghost thing at first.
Yeah, he's very good at lying.
Until I saw that I'm evil slip in the dashboard. Then I was sold at that point.
That was an incredible moment. The I'm evil note. Which, who wrote that?
Did the ghost
write it? Did the dad write it and put it in there?
No, Becca must have wrote it before she died.
Hey, I played some of these like Phasma games, and the ghosts can draw sometimes. So
okay.
it could be a certain type of spirit.
A drawing ghost. Got it.
Yeah, some of them are really good at it, according to these games. I don't know if that's the way it is with real ghosts, but...
Well, now you're making me realize, not to jump too far ahead, but speaking of drawing, the part where Mitchell's, like, obsessed with the car and just draws the car a bunch of times.
Uh-huh, yeah, he gets...
Oh, yeah.
He gets possessed by the thought of the car.
That was another one of those subtle moments where it's like, did the ghost make him do it, or is he actually just kind of weird? I lean towards the weird on every one of those situations.
I agree. I think a lot of the moments were just him being, like, weird about cars.
We just don't know how good he is at drawing cars. Like, is he good at drawing cars for a 12-year-old, or is he like doing these incredible photorealistic pencil drawings of a car?
Concept art for like a race car TV show or something.
Yeah.
Highly detailed, and he drew it multiple, I think he said like 20 or 30 times. It's like, yeah, he had no idea he was doing it.
Here's the thing, the teacher's not encouraging him if she's seeing these beautiful car drawings and she's upset that he's not paying attention in history. She should be encouraging him and his hobby.
Well, apparently that's the answer. They weren't good, otherwise she would have been like, oh man, don't even bother, just keep working on this. But she didn't react that way, so it must not be that good.
Leave school, kid. You've already got a future. You're already going.
Well, this one, you didn't even draw it. You just wrote down the words cool car and he misspelled it. So he meets Marissa, who lets him out of the locked car.
Right.
Marissa Medden, and she's just moved in, or so she says.
She is described with her clothing this time.
Yeah. Is she wearing like bracelets or has like blue nails or whatever?
Well, that was the thing, right? So in the book, the car is described as blue with white trimmings and all types. We see it on the cover, and it is a blue car. But she shows up wearing a blue vest and she has blue nails. So in my mind, I was like, whoa. Oh, this is the car ghost.
Arl did two literatures in this book.
At least.
This is his most literate book for sure. Austin, congratulations.
I might as well not read anymore after this.
Yeah.
No, you're pretty good.
This is the best he's got. Marissa just kind of disappears and Mitchell's like, oh, that's weird. And Todd comes out to snitch on him, but they sneak back in to find their dad electrocuting himself on an exposed wire.
Yeah, that part was actually kind of scary.
It was horrific. The dad is smoking.
He's standing up like a figure, like in a weird position with his arms out or whatever.
Yeah, at first they think it's a ghost. Oh no, it's just my dad dying.
He is about to become a ghost.
Whew. That was a close one.
He was almost a ghost.
That moment is so like real and jarring. It kind of makes you forget about the really boring ghost encounter that just happened.
The true horrors of this book, really, it's dad is suffering the true horrors of this book. Dad gets put through the ringer in this one.
Yeah, but he sucks. He's not a very good dad.
Oh, he's trying. He's trying to build things.
He's doing his best, and he's just mad because he can't do it right for his family.
No,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being a father isn't about effort. It's about results, all right?
Damn. It's a meritocracy for Kevin. Wow. So this happens. Dad almost dies. Quick thinking, Mitchell grabs some rubber gloves and unplugs the...
Which Dad was not using, no. I guess.
And I don't even know what was going on. Like, there's a running theme of there's a wire that's bad in the house that Dad keeps talking about, which is the one that almost kills him. He pulls it out, saves his dad's life. Dad falls over and like can barely talk. Mom comes out. She's upset. And then we jump to the next part of the book, and Mitchell has already forgotten about dad's near-death experience and is back to dreaming about the haunted-ass car.
He's clearly used to his dad's near-death experience.
That's fair.
He's had two in this like, first quarter of the book, so he's obviously used to it.
We're not exaggerating either. Like, the electrocution description was like, I'm trying to find it. It was like his lips had like pulsed purple and his skin was red. He definitely like suffered some permanent damage to his body.
Yeah, that was probably... other than some of the car scenes, the scariest part of the book. Arguably the scariest part.
You make a great point, too. He does change, because for the rest of the book, he refers to him as my purple dad throughout the rest of the book.
That was almost the title of the book, but the car ended up being more prominent.
My purple dad.
Yeah, the only thing I wrote down about the dream ballet is that we have another example of a Rat Fink-style ghost driving a car all crazy. So
it's a very evil ghost. They let us know many times. So they go back to Mitchell, and he's dreaming of the car again. He's already forgotten his dad. And his brother comes in, clearly affected by the near death of his father, and says, Mitchell, what happens if you die in a dream? Clearly ruminating upon his father's near death. And
I forgot about this scene entirely. It's so dark.
It is incredibly dark. Mitchell just like pushes him off. His brother is trying to connect with him, and he simply will not. I don't even know what this really serves. I guess he gets Mitchell thinking about ghosts a little bit.
Well, Mitchell's brother Todd is of the age where he's realizing his own mortality.
Right.
Possibly related to a couple recent incidents in his life.
Yeah. Yep. And he's beginning to ask some questions and also some high functioning anxiety that'll mm-hmm. develop later on in life.
Yep.
But I think it's just a what happens after you die sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's great. You know, just a classic conversation between two brothers. no one knows what happens when you die in a dream. Scientists still can't tell you. Mitchell goes to school, draws the car. He begs his dad to take him out again in the car. He's not put off by the weird getting locked in the car experience.
Mitchell's okay with it. He hasn't bought into this thing being haunted yet. In fact, Todd is saying over and over again that this is a haunted car. Todd's been reading a lot of Goosebumps books or Scare Your Pants Off books.
Yeah, you know, it's wild that he wears an X-Files shirt, which is not age appropriate, when he could have just been wearing a Goosebumps shirt and had like a self-promo in the work, but okay.
R.L. Stine is above that. He won't self-promote.
He simply would never.
Like, yeah, I got this Goosebumps shirt at Target. That. It was $9.99. Available now.
Also, I love that you say he told you that. I like to imagine that you were watching that Arthur episode. And he turned to the camera and was like, I would never self-promote with him.
Yeah, by the way, just unrelated to the story happening, I would never sell out.
So Mitchell hasn't bought into this being a haunted car yet. And his friends show up.
This was before the I'm evil.
This is.
Sticker,
right? Right, yeah. It hasn't revealed itself to him. So when
Todd's not sick yet.
No.
They're not going to get the, well, they're not getting the Advil. I forget what they were
doing. No, they never would.
Ice cream and.
And milk.
I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but I just love the idea that, like, oh, Todd doesn't need the aspirin. It never says that they have aspirin for Todd, who's sick.
No,
it's just he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it.
If he's anything like his father, his body will need to fight death constantly, so we must train him young.
They're getting another home defibrillator in case Dad tries to repair a thing again. And they're out in a rainstorm, and they can't find the button that starts the windshield wipers. Super relatable.
Very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag relatable content. Mitchell looks in the glove compartment, finds a note that says, I'm evil. And what a chilling moment.
I cackled. I don't laugh often reading these books. That really cracked me up.
I wrote down a note. It just literally wrote, I'm evil.
That's I wrote the exact same thing. I actually wrote, I'm evil, note. That's all I put on.
I thought about elaborating for myself in the note, but I'm like, nah, that's all. I just need the I'm evil.
You might forget later. Am I evil? Look at the note. Ah, I'm evil. Okay, cool.
All I could think of was, and this is for no one. I'm just saying this for myself. All I could think of was the national song Conversation 16, where the chorus has the guy from the National singing in a super deep, beautiful voice, I'm evil. And I'm like, yeah.
Every national song sounds like a spooky song.
Agreed.
It is. Yeah, it does.
He's spooky Frank Sinatra for sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
He kind of is.
So in this rain, I think Dad had an interesting turn of character where, if I remember right, he pulls over to the side of the road to figure out
yes
where the button is. But Everything else in his life has been very much just grab the bare wire without any gloves on. Right. I thought that'd be an interesting change for him.
Yeah.
Well, the near electrification, or electrocution, the near electric, he almost died to electricity the prior night.
Yes.
So
yeah.
He finally had that moment that went a little too far. He's second guessing himself.
He's changed.
Now.
He's like, I cannot change any further colors. I'm just going to stay purple for the rest of my life. So
he realizes that father type is weak to electric type. And his mortality looms. So he pulls over. Then nothing really happens.
I think Mitchell's friends show up, right? This is where Mitchell's friends show up to see
the
car.
Yeah, that's the next note I have. I forget if they just drive home after he finds the I Am Evil note. I don't think anything else really...
I think they just come back home.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah
they, I forget Alan... when that friends come into play.
I believe it's here. I believe they show up. And they're like, you keep talking about this car and that you're a legend of cars. And we need to bear witness. So he's like, oh, yeah, let me show you the cool car. So they go outside and they get in. And this, Austin, is the frigid part.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So Alan, Steve, and Todd are all locked in the car.
This part was actually a little spooky.
There were quite a few parts. I agree with you with like the kid getting sucked into the car. Like, I think it could have been him just giving himself excuses to do what he wanted to do. But it also is like kind of a cool ghost element where it's like possessing him and forcing him to enter it. Like, that part is spooky, and the things that happen around that are actually pretty spooky. Except
he wasn't, just to clarify, he wasn't like vacuumed into the car, he was like compelled.
If they made it a TV episode out of it, he probably would have been vacuumed in.
Yeah, you're right,
that would have been cool.
No kid could be like coerced. They need to be forcibly pulled into the car on TV.
The cold, though, that's when it really got real to me. That's when I kind of like sat up in my chair after that. I mean, actually, I was laying down, but you know, metaphorically, I sat up in my chair.
I was just gonna say, like, this part where I guess the stakes are these kids who we've never really talked to much are now all going to freeze to death because the AC is blasting Arctic cold at them. I was like, this is pretty impressive.
They can't even breathe. It's so cold, which I don't think I've ever been in cold that cold. Have you guys?
I knew a few folks who like to blast the AC a little too hard, and it felt rude to correct them on it. So,
you've had hard breathing times.
I've suffered as they have suffered.
I was just impressed with the car's engineering that, you know, it must have clearly been like just topped off with some Freon, and it's not going to be that cold after you do it again. But
I figured it had to be like the chill of the ghosts, because, you know, that's what they always say.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure the ghost turned the AC on too, just to like for the effect. But I figured it had to be the ghost chilling.
Yeah, the ghost definitely turned on the AC to plus up their chilling ghost effect for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was only like 10% the AC, but 90% the ghost. But that extra 10%, you can go a long
way. It really sells it.
Yeah. And everyone's blaming Mitchell because he's sitting in the driver's seat, but the key isn't even in the car, and they're all locked in. Somebody calls Mitchell a dumb cluck.
A dumb cluck, which...
I saw that, too.
In 2023 is extremely close to cuck, which made me start thinking about cucks and not clucks.
Did RL just write you dumb fuck? And then the editor was like, well, that seems a little blue for Goosebumps. So
just out of nowhere, like almost halfway through the book, just dropped the first F-bomb.
I think that was his editor's like main job, was just getting rid of all the cussing. Like, RL was always just spouting off, and they're like, ah, geez. Well, he writes a decent children's book. We just got to cut out all the swears.
I think I'm gonna start adapting this as an insult, because honestly, the last couple of years, I've been sad that the insult to cuck has been kind of co-opted by the alt-right.
Right.
It's a hell of a fun word to say.
It really is fun.
It's just a funny sound. But now I can say cluck without being tied to any red pill shit.
It's just chicken stuff. It's cool. I
mean, yeah, you're just dumb chicken.
Oh, yeah. How did we get on this tangent? Cannot even remember. Oh, yeah. You dumb cluck or whatever.
You dumb cluck.
I did not even think about that word at all.
It only stuck out to me because of the come on thing earlier, where I was like, what are these terms he's using? I do not understand this. I can't figure out what he's going for.
I will say, I've never done a book club type situation, so I'm finding it fascinating the different things that we're like each of us found relevant or like. Like noteworthy
that we tapped into, yeah, for sure. This part, it ends with them getting out again. I believe Marissa saves them, right?
Yeah, she opens the door.
Yeah,
and now we do see that for the first time we see Marissa, she lets Mitchell out, and is talking to him, and then Todd comes up and distracts him, and then she disappears. So it very much so seems that she is a ghost. In this one,
yeah,
she talks to the other children.
Yeah, and I think Alan and or Steve, like, acknowledge that Marissa is there.
I did also make a note
of
that, yeah. Because mm-hmm. Todd very specifically didn't see the girl the first time, so I actually went back and double-checked to make sure that they actually did notice the girl, and they did.
Yeah, so they confirm, we have to confirm that she's corporeal in some way at this point, mm-hmm. or at least able to take some sort of body shape that convinces children that she's alive. So in this moment, we are unsure what she is, but they all decide to go home, and they don't get in trouble yet, right? I think he sneaks out again the same night, right?
Yeah, he still just, like, comes right back to it. Like, he even, like, is like, I don't know why I'm doing it. I probably shouldn't do it, but I just gotta
touch it. I need to feel that smooth leather.
Yeah, this is what a lot of characters in the Fast and Furious series deal with all the time.
They're compelled to enter cars and drive fast and rob banks and stuff.
The next encounter is the big one.
The truest horror. This is the most, well.
Yeah, let's get through this. So he gets into the car for reasons, and the car starts up this time and takes him away on a little ride, and he hears through the radio, I believe, mm-hmm. the car just kind of moaning to itself, I'm so evil.
I'm so evil.
It's like, you're the evilest ghost, say some evil vile shit, which she does eventually say to him later on, but she's constantly leading with, I'm so evil.
It's like really congratulatory.
I think the ghost doth protest too much to kind of force. Like, I think she's really trying to compensate for being and is not actually that evil.
It's a front.
It is 100% a front. But she does do some pretty evil shit in that she scares him a lot on the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she parks him in front of a train.
Multiple times a child is screaming, I'm gonna die, which I have to find a little bit scary. And I can't lie, like, hearing a kid think, I'm going to die. That's a little freaky.
This part of the book, again, validates your mom's choice to not let you read these books, I think. You should not be reading this as a child. Because he gets abused in the car, too. He's thrown about in the car. Mm-hmm. He's banging his head on stuff. He gets messed up. He's like his father before him. He is getting fucked up by everything around him. She drives him around, and he thinks he's going to be thrown into the oncoming path of a train, and she stops the car right in front of it, where he watches it whiz by, and he sees this light flash before his eyes.
And then when he drives home, the ghost dumps him out in front of his parents, who are like, holy shit, what the hell did you do?
Yes. And this is the first one is the one where he realizes it's truly a ghost, and he also thinks it's Marissa at this point.
But this is also when Marissa shows up to be like, maybe it's not Mitchell's fault. Maybe he didn't steal the car. Maybe something else is going on.
Right.
And his parents are like, shut up, strange child. As they kind of rightly should be. Then, he's grounded and he's in super deep trouble.
This is where he has the dream ballet, and he draws the... He has the drawing of the car in class, and he's just completely consumed.
No, that was way earlier.
Was that earlier?
Yeah, that already happened. Now, I think he has another dream of a car that's fused with electrocution.
That's right, because with his father's electrocution is sticking in the back of his brain too, because he's not processing that.
It is kind of hard to. It is easy rather to get these bits mixed up, because the whole book is just a series of him getting in the car, something bad happening, getting out of the car, getting in the car, something bad happening, over and over and over. So get some of them mixed up.
Austin, you're right, because like in the beginning of the book, this one's kind of trucking along nicely. There's like, there's good motivation. Nice, thanks. it's going along, like you see the motivations for each of their actions and what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? Like there's like obvious reasons why.
Guess we're getting a new car.
Yeah, where they're like, it's like, we get, like got all this good stuff going on. And then this part devolves exactly like you said into just a constant refrain of like, enter car, car says it's evil, car does scary thing, drop him off. And then we kind of repeat that process until the final car showdown.
Yeah, I literally forgot about that these last two car incidents weren't the same, because I thought he had already been grounded at this point when the train thing happened.
Right, right.
But no, you're right. That is why he got grounded.
Yeah, so he's grounded. He goes back to Mr. Douglas's place to try and snoop around and talk to Mr. Douglas about the car, but Mr. Douglas isn't having it. And he scopes inside of Mr. Douglas's house a picture of Marissa,
Yes.
With two candles next to it that says in loving memory. And he's like, oh my God, Marissa's dead. And then he gets a call.
He gets a call from Marissa.
He gets a call from Marissa and he's like, I know the truth. And she's like, okay, I see no reason to clarify what you think the truth is.
All right, goodbye.
And then he hangs up and I think the car is glowing green at this point or something. The car glows green at some point. So he goes down to tell the car to stop glowing, and then he gets in the car for reasons.
I did like the green glowing, because as a kid who never got to read Goosebumps, I just associated the color green with Goosebumps.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That is the Goosebumps color. So I really felt like, oh, yeah. When the car started glowing green, I did get that sort of, like, weird nostalgia, or what would have been nostalgia of, like, yeah, I'm reading Goosebumps.
Hell yeah.
The car's all green.
Glowing green, it's a Goosebumps signature.
Oh, man, I'm glad you got to have that. That's sick.
It was brief, but I did have it for, like,
I'm glad we did this.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah.
That's what I want to call out. During the time that Mitchell is grounded, he goes and talks to his brother Todd, consulting about this, and he mentions that Todd is playing You Don't Know Jack.
That's right. That's right.
Which was a beloved trivia game that I liked to play as a kid. And he's like, just really goes on. He's like, my brother loves those games. He says they crack him up. I'm like, yeah, Cookie was really funny. It was a really good host of those shows.
Cookie is good. I'm still pro Cookie. He can be a little annoying sometimes, but he's cool.
Was that a paid sponsorship that was not disclosed?
It certainly felt like it. You know what? You could say that, but knowing RL, having read hundreds of his books at this point, he certainly likes to put in what he's like probably dealing with in his daily life. Like, his kids were probably playing the shit out of that game.
And besides, he did confirm to me personally that he does not sell out, so I guess I should have remembered that.
That's right. Yeah.
RL, probably a big fan of Jackbox games right now. Probably playing a lot of...
or he thinks the kids are, or he thought the kids were when when he was writing the book.
He was just ahead of his time, honestly. I like that you keep threatening the idea that maybe he's selling out and then being like, no, no, no.
Yeah, I forgot. He would never...
No, you're like, he's a man of his word. He would never sell out.
Yeah, that's true.
So... I forget how we get here, but he's in the car. Oh, okay. So his parents leave because his aunt is sick or something like that. But he's grounded, so they're like, you can stay home or whatever. We don't really care.
Yeah, he's like, you need to take a time to cool off.
Sort of. You're acting crazy.
We're going to leave you here with the car, so cool off.
Dad doesn't take the car. It's insane to me that the dad doesn't take the car keys.
No, this kid is obviously he's tormented by this car, and they leave him with it. Like, it's like he's got some sort of, like, he's like addicted to a drug, and they're like, we're just gonna leave you with the drug so you can have some time on your own to just ponder it and not touch it.
Mitchell and Todd also scope out the house that Marissa said she lived in, and turns out she doesn't live there.
That's right. It's just a spooky house.
So parents leave, and Todd is drawn once again to the ghost car, where he gets in, and this time there's a ghoul in it.
And this scene is actually gross and scary, and I have to send y'all have you seen the other covers, the like international covers of this book?
I was looking at those too. This book has some amazing other covers.
Like, that's a spooky image. It's not nearly as scary as what is described in the book, but it is still
The French cover with a cool skull decal.
Yeah.
I liked how it was described in the book, because even on the cover, this is like, oh, here's the ghoul's face looking right at you. I think it was originally what because Marissa's in the car next to him in the passenger seat, but she's not facing him.
Right.
It's almost her back's turned to you, which is kind of a scary image to think about. And then when she turns around, her face is... It's not pretty as it was before, where it really called out how she could be a TV star.
Oh, that's right. They say she could be a model at the beginning of it.
She could be a model. Now her face is all full of pus and maggots and stuff.
And nose worms. She's got nose worms.
Nose worms.
Did you guys make note of the nose worms?
I did, yeah. And they were white, if I recall, the white nose worms.
I was like, I don't think I've ever seen dangly nose worms. That's kind of, that's gross. That's really sick.
There was something kind of creepy about the picture of it in my head. That French book cover you posted is not what I was thinking. I was imagining this like very small girl in this very large seat, just like turning around with the goopy stuff falling on her face. Actually, it was a little bit creepy.
It was creepy. She was melting before me. In fact, she does melt in the car. She starts to, she turns to him and she's talking about how evil she is and stuff, and then she like leans forward, I think, and melts into a green gas and disappears.
And weirdly, Mitchell isn't pumped to have visual confirmation that something exists beyond the veil of death. Like, he's not being like, ah, cool, this isn't it. He's just like, ah, I'm scared.
I am scared.
Well, I mean, she's just saying I'm evil, so he's just saying I'm scared. He's matching the energy of the room, you know?
Yeah. So the car starts up. This is what Tesla has been trying to do with self-driving cars for the last 3 decades. It's a fully self-driving car, and it just peels out.
Oh my God, we just have to put our dead in the cars. We just have to call the cars, and then they'll drive.
We just need someone to watch over it.
Don't let Elon hear this.
The ghoul reveals that she died in this car, and she says, "I was only 14, to which Mitchell replies, "I'm 12.
He's like trying to, he's trying to negotiate one upper, like, well, you know, actually.
I mean, you had a little more time than me. It's a little more unfair for me to die right now.
Give me 2 more years, and we'll come back, and we'll do this car ride again.
We'll loop back, we'll touch base. I like that he says this to her, and then she's like, I was close to your age, and then I killed myself by accident by driving a car too fast.
So you have to die.
So now I must punish others,
Yeah, I did find that a little funny as well. It's like, oh, can we stop and talk about this? Because your logic actually is not really making much sense right here.
Yeah, this entire time in the book, I was kind of curious of, like, even when you didn't know if necessarily the ghost was possessed in the car or the car was sentient, like a Christine, like, why don't think the car, you know, when she was, like, taking it for the test, the thrill ride and almost hit the train, it's like, I don't think the car wants to be destroyed, because if the car is destroyed, then the ghost is destroyed.
Mm-hmm. How did the car sustain no damage from the death of Becca?
I assume that it must have just got fixed up, I guess.
Which means that the seller did a lot of disservice, right? He didn't disclose that on Carfax. It'd
been a previous accident, yeah. That's why you need that Fox. What's that Fox commercial?
Yes, Carfax Fox, yeah. That's sponsored by Carfax.
Yeah. That's that the end of the book is just a commercial for Carfax. I actually did find it super weird. I thought it would have been a lot spookier and made the sad dad thing make more sense. Not that the dad wouldn't be sad either way, but make the whole, like, sad, got to get rid of the car thing make more sense if the dad had been the one driving it.
Right.
But, like, because she was just so evil that the book wanted to, like, nail that home, that she took the car and went off in this crazy driving spree.
What's that great old viral video where, like, that 8-year-old boy got arrested for driving a car, and he's like, I just wanted to do hood rat stuff with my friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's her energy. That is 100% Becca's energy.
I guess what RL was thinking was that he wanted it to kind of be equivalent to the main character. Like, he wants, okay, you better watch out, because this could be you in the future. I still think it would have been way better if it was the dad got in an accident and then the girl died. She didn't necessarily have to be evil when she was alive. She could have just been evil in death, but, you know, oh well.
That would have been more kid powery, I think, if it was the dad's fault all along. Like, that would have been kind of interesting.
And it would have made actual sense, because ultimately when we get to the end of this book, none of it really makes any sense. Let's take this one in for a landing.
Yeah. Let's pull this into the driveway.
Yeah. There it is. Let's pull it under the tennis ball that hangs inside of the garage.
That's what that's for. We get home and the whole house is on fire. And Mitchell says to the ghoul, oh my God, you saved my life. You did a really good thing. And she goes, no, I'm evil. I'm evil. And he's like, nah, thanks, dude. I'm going to live.
High five.
Can I read this quote to her? Because I think it's so fucking funny and how cartoonish it is.
Yeah, I love it.
But you say, like, I failed, she shrieked, ripping out hunk after hunk of her hair. Her inky black eyes turned to me, glowing with hatred. I have failed. I have accidentally done good. And now I must pay. Now I must die forever.
It really seemed like RL was trying to pull this one into the driveway, too, at the end. Like, okay, let's just wrap this up.
He's like, wow, page count already? All right, let's ship this out.
And if you think about what she says, the implied darkness of what she says, it was revealed to Mitchell that there is life after death. And then you find out, oh, no, you can actually die forever if you accidentally do the wrong thing when you're dead.
Yeah. If you do the opposite of what you were trying to do while you're dead, you die forever.
You can't flip-flop as a ghost.
Yeah, you really have to be careful with that. Yeah.
You got to be on brand.
Yeah. I love that she could have just, like, turned around and then continued, like, crazy driving, but it's like, oh
shit, I was good.
I guess this is it. Oh man.
She just screams fuck as she shrinks away.
Yeah, this is where it's all revealed, where Marissa had a twin named Becca who was evil.
She literally says she was evil. My evil sister who died.
And that's it. That's literally, that's why we saw a picture of Marissa. It was actually a picture of Becca.
I've been trying to come and warn you about it, but I didn't tell you. And then when I called you on the phone and you said, I know the truth, I just assumed we were on the same page.
Yep. I assumed you figured it out.
It's funny because she also says that her sister died, and her sister was evil before she died. And then she's like, and then my sister's ghost visited me and told me that she was going to torture me and others based around this car. It's pretty messed up.
That's ghost.
She really was not lying, though, when the evil thing. She, Mitchell found cars. She found evil.
Everyone has a thing.
She's a legend of evil.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Mitchell's parents are like, well, kind of on my fault for burning down the house. The electrical wiring kind of took the whole house in flames. We were worried, thought you were dead. We're not even mad that you drove the car, because...
We'll deal with that problem later.
Hell of a night, yeah.
We'll get angry tomorrow.
And Mitchell's like, I'm gonna cool it on cars for a little while.
Yeah, I did love that. The moral of the story was, if you're really into something, just don't. You could get killed.
Yeah, stop it. Stop being interested in anything.
He just like, yeah, I'm gonna maybe play baseball, I guess.
Yeah, I'll get into baseball or hockey or something, he says.
Yeah, so he apparently had these backed up in his mind because he pulled them out pretty quickly as alternatives. So he'd already been thinking about like exiting his car fandom forum and joining the MLB forum.
He had a car exit strategy for sure. They fall asleep and they wake up at their neighbor's house the next morning, and a mechanic is coming out from the garage to fix the car. And when he opens the car to find, because they say, oh, the car, you know, needs a little bit of work. He's like, well, this thing will never work. It doesn't have a battery inside. And that is our grand twist at the end of this book. Not anything about like the ghost that definitely lived in there or anything like that. Just that dad is going to figure it out, because the only explanation for the fact that this car was able to drive these past couple of days without a battery is ghosts.
Yep, that's it. Like, it'd be cool if they found like a severed head or something connected to where the battery should be, or something gruesome like that.
Oh man, it's like there's a child. I honestly kept thinking we're gonna find out that like the girl was in the car, like literally in the car, like Snowpiercer or something.
Oh,
if Goosebumps was written in the 2020s, that would have happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
This would have. They needed the 2020s edge, but we couldn't have this back in 1999.
Yeah, people were already trying to get these books canceled back in the day.
Don't give them more ammunition.
As kind of like a low impact finale, I kind of liked this compared to so many other ones we've ended.
Okay,
where just like, and then I woke up and I was a car.
Yeah, Austin. I was a haunted car. Oh no, Austin. When you finished the B book, I can't remember how that one ends. Does that end with a twist ending? Do you remember?
Oh no, I didn't finish.
Oh, you didn't finish it.
I got about 70% of the way through, and then it was like, oh no, we're doing this one. So that's when I switched to the other one.
Okay, gotcha.
So I still have yet to actually finish the B book. I don't know if he unturns from a B.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, here's the beautiful thing about Goosebumps books. They tend to end with a twist. Usually, Chad made a joke about the kid turning into a haunted car. That's actually highly likely in one of these books.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of hoping that he remained a bee, because he kind of sucked, so I thought maybe he should just be a bee.
Or like the mechanic shows up and he's like, I'll tell you what's wrong with, and then like he doesn't go to the car, he goes to the boy and like opens up his chest and there's like mechanic stuff in there.
This one doesn't have a heart in it.
Your son's a car. Dun, dun, dun.
Arl's son.
He opens up the car and it's full of bees, and he's like, it's a tie-in with the other book.
Buy the other book.
I mean, it's insane to think that the dad bought the car without popping the hood, but whatever.
Well, he did turn it on. He turned it on and he said, sounds clean. And then he was good.
He did say, sounds clean.
I took note of that because I was like, I don't think I could ever hear a car and go, sounds clean, and like know what a clean sounding car sounds like. Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy clearly knows what he's doing in all aspects of life, so he doesn't need to actually look for the battery. Oh, didn't the dad have a change of heart or something at the end too, if I'm recalling? He's like, yeah, no, now I'll make sure that I don't kill my family at the end.
He's like, I will not be fixing, and he's like, I am hiring subcontractors from here on out. I'm going to, what is that, the Angie's List. I'm going to angieslist.com every time I need to do something.
No dad would ever say that.
I'm going to use a certified union electrician and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I love it. It was specifically, he mentioned only the electrics. He wasn't going to do anything electric anymore. That's it.
I'll still do everything else. I'll still build the foundation of our new house, and, you know, that probably won't cause any problems, but no more electric work for me.
No more things that could directly kill me or my family.
I think there's things that could directly kill his family that isn't related to the electrical, but he hasn't quite learned those lessons yet because he didn't get, like, smashed by a log yet.
Dad only learns by doing.
Yeah, he learns from very direct, specific lessons.
Yes.
As his son does, apparently. If you almost die by a car, then you don't do cars anymore.
Dude, like father, like son.
Wow. Cat's in the cradle.
Cat in the cradle. So, Austin, what did you think of your first, this is your first full Goosebumps reading experience then?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I liked when the car was green. I think that should have happened more.
Really could have leaned on that green car thing.
Yeah, because that was pretty cool. Yeah, I did like the way that he was constantly looking at the car. One of you guys mentioned it earlier about the childlike description of how awesome the car looked.
Glistening in the light and stuff like that. In my mind's eye, it was a very sick car in those moments.
Yeah.
I think as adults, we can definitely sit back and like goof on these books, which is fun to do. I mean, mm-hmm. That's part of what I do with when I talk about Arthur episodes. Yep. Like I'm sitting there riffing on it, but like really, I actually like it. I think if I had read this book, I mean, cars specifically is not like a super spooky concept to me, mm-hmm. but like when the car stuff was going down, even I was like, "Ooh, this is not looking so good." I can imagine being like actually afraid of that, or being afraid of driving in the car with my parents after that.
Yes, this would definitely induce, I think, a couple phobias for some kids.
Yeah, you know, every kid needs a couple phobias, though.
Yeah,
like at least it's a fairly silly phobia. I mean, well, I guess statistically, like you are pretty likely to die in the car.
Jesus Christ!
And that's how the book ends. R.L. Stine just like, by the way, there's it's the highest percentage chance of child death. All right. So be careful.
If you're driving in your car while listening to this podcast, please be careful, everyone. We love you.
I like to think in the TV episode where the kid gets vacuumed into the car that we've already directed in our minds, that he shows up for a very special episode moment at the end to give that exact speech that Austin just gave.
There was points during the book where I could perfectly visually see a Goosebumps episode.
Yes.
Like the part with the girl turning around in the car, I had that like visualized in my head.
That was a creepy part.
Yeah, so even the car, like when the car is like driving around, I could see just like the kid in this car. In my head, the car, once the kid got in the car, I don't know why, mm-hmm. but in my head, the car was huge and the kid was actually small. Uh-huh. He's like getting thrown around. Uh-huh. Like not like to an insane proportion, but like a little bit bigger than it should have been.
Sure. Yeah.
And which made it extra haunted. That's how I would do it if I was directing this. And he's just getting like slung around. And
a car that's bigger on the inside than the outside.
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, it is haunted.
Terrifying.
Emphasize the smallness of Mitchell.
Yeah. That's part of what made it seem spooky. It's like he's so helpless. He can't even, he's like not even as big as he
should. Sure, like you can't, like it can't reach like the steering wheel. Like,
Yeah, and the horror segments had some of that aspect of like one of those dreams where you're like trying to drive the car and you can't brake and it's not working. Stuff like that.
Yep.
Or like even like you're playing some sport and you're trying to run to keep up and you just can't, like, and you can't figure out why. It had some of those like nightmare aspects to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I gotta say, I think this one was actually written pretty well. Sometimes you'll read mm-hmm. these and they'll be repetitive. There were a couple moments where he did it in this one where like the kid is asking a lot of questions in a row and it just feels like he's kind of like buying time. But I think that was really minimal in this one, and there were some severely scary things. The speakers were scary, the voice coming through the speakers, which it said scarier stuff, but still a scary idea. The spooky ghost, the spooky car rides. There was a lot of good spooks in this one.
I think I have a new theory on which Goosebumps books tend to be good, mm-hmm. and it's boring title equals better book.
Okay.
I can see that.
Haunted car, haunted school. Like, these are, like, these ones are more, like, conceptual on the inside. And, like, stuff that sounds like the title came first, like Werewolf in the Living Room or whatever, tend to be kind of boring executions of the title. Yeah, more limited.
Bingo, bango, book's done. Got the title. I'm good.
Right.
And this one he had to work for.
Yeah, I kind of think when he has an actual idea for a book, it's better than when he has an idea for a title. But that's not how Goosebumps books are made.
I like this theory.
Well, I think that was a bump, guys.
Yeah, I think we bumped.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, man. It was, we're a big fan of your stuff and really honored to have you on the show with us.
Appreciate it. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. I mean... I haven't quite scratched the goosebumps itch. I want to watch some of the episodes.
I mean, most of our guests are usually so scarred from the experience that they don't want to come back. So you saying that means a lot.
I have not been scarred enough yet. Maybe later on, if I'm like turning my computer off and then going about to go to bed and like out of the speakers, I'm evil. Maybe at that point I might have to call and be like, you know, I'm going to cancel that future appointment.
Can't do it anymore, guys. I'm sorry.
It's affecting me mentally.
Things have taken a turn.
But it hasn't quite hit yet, so. Next time we'll do a Scare Your Pants Off book
episode. Would love to read. Yeah, we had talked about doing Arthur. If there's any way to do something like that, I'd love to. Where else should people like check out all your stuff besides you mentioned your YouTube channel?
Original YouTube channel, Peanut Butter Gamer, been going for like almost 13 years or something.
Wow.
Still upload on there. But I also have a new channel, youtube.com/peebs. Where we upload a little bit more frequently, like less scripted stuff, more just like having fun, heavily edited stuff on there. So you can check out that.
Nice.
Sick.
Kevin, Paul, you got anything else we should be checking out?
The Super Try Game Jam finished up this month, and there are a lot of cool submissions. So if you want to go to jam.supertrystudios.com, you can play some cool free games in your browser that some cool folks made with me over the last couple months. Super Try has a submission there. We made, Joe and I made a skateboarding game that's pretty fun.
It's hella fun.
Yeah, and I'm working on that a little bit more this month. But there are a lot of cool submissions. I super recommend playing The Rocketeer, which is a really cool little visual novel that moves through all these different like modes. It's really cool.
Nice.
And there's like a Monkey Island style adventure game about a skateboarding dwarf that's really good. There's one called Spinalization, which is like a god game that uses a slot machine sort of mechanic.
Ooh, yeah.
Like buying resources and then you're spinning to see if your civilization survives. There's a lot of good stuff. If you want to check it out, it's at jam.supertrystudios.com. Thank you to everybody who participated in the jam or submitted themes or thought about something creatively. I appreciate all of you. Thanks for jamming with me.
I don't have too much to promote. I will just reiterate, check out Austin's stuff. If you don't know it and you're listening to this show, you will absolutely dig his stuff. So please go check out both of his channels.
Mm-hmm. And hey, if you also want to support Goosebuds, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds. Pledge and keep the show going and get access to a bunch of cool stuff like our Discord, bonus Camp Goosebud episodes, and join a pretty awesome community. We love you all. Also, check out Continue on TikTok.
Are you guys on TikTok?
I don't know. Maybe. I think we are.
Yeah, I've strong-armed you guys into making a TikTok channel, so go check out the TikTok.
I don't even use it, so I don't know. I have no. I was told that we're there, so yeah, go check that out.
Well, I'll go follow it because I made a TikTok account recently. Also, I figured it's finally about time.
Austin, what's your TikTok? Is it Peanut Butter Gamer?
I think so. Okay. I think that was. I think that was taken. I had to like cheese it a little bit, but yeah.
Oh, fine. Twitter's dead, so I'm on there now as TikTok as Quantum.
All right, let's all move to TikTok. It's fine. I'm into it. Let's do it.
I'll resist with you, Paul.
I'll stay
in the lame zone.
Okay, cool.
You're gonna love Kevin. You gotta get on Indie Gaming. That's a different conversation. I don't have anything to plug, but I you know what? While we're talking about haunted cars, if you haven't checked it out, go watch Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King directed film from the 90s about killer cars. Beautiful. Coming alive and holding Emilio Estevez and Yeardley Smith to hostage in a gas station. It's fucking wild. Stephen King was famously on cocaine while he directed it. There's a truck. I don't know if you guys ever seen it. There's just like a car that just has a machine gun strapped to it.
I love that.
Holding them hostage.
Gun cars.
It's fucking
cool.
I did actually see this movie when I was young. I remember.
Yeah,
this.
It used to be on TV a lot. It's just a great bad movie. Cool. I love it.
Cool. I'll check that out. All right, well, all
right, guys.
This has been a good bump. We love all of you. And Austin, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Austin.
It was great.
Thanks, Austin. All right, we'll see you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye. All right,
beep, beep.
Bye.
This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, especially those forever immortalized in the digital Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
Book of Names.
Starting with Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara.
Hollis, Hornbeak.
Lowbelly, Hate Me pledges all 15 XFL fans and the population of Gumby World to the Grey Ghost Kevin, except Prickle, who loves pop.
I didn't get fucking Prickle. God damn it.
Oh, you remembered my high school mascot.
He came to me, though.
The Prickles.
Buddy Morrill.
Cameron Murphy Audio.
Hey, Josh Robb.
Michael McDowell.
Mickey C.
Mike Lanteri.
Nathan Dolzal.
Ilkade.
Mel Dipson.
Afshin.
Brian Wells.
Dango Twiss.
Zentacles.
Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Jason Crooker.
Clay Castle.
John Keady.
Miguel Pardo.
Calf.
New Paranoia Shop content coming soon.
No, it's not. The Juggalobalist.
Alan Saylor.
Cody Redfield.
Just think about the Juggalobalist and is that dangerous? Gregory D. Warren.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin. Thank Ooh. You, Dwarven Child.
Chad, I want to say that also that the Juggalobalist is really sticking with me, too. Bradford Coulter.
I'm just thinking about the danger that person presents.
There's a chaotic control that's occurring there. It scares
yeah,
me.
Yeah, the Fago will cover the planet. Chosen One pledges his cadre of musketeers to House Kevin.
I got ghosts and dwarfs and muskets.
But you don't have Prickle.
Damn it.
You'll never have Prickle.
You never have Prickle. Gumby, we should go in there.
Jar Jar Slinks.
Levi Tham.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Eggman.
Anthony Mulberry.
Carl.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation of Quicksand Truth pledges their nonprofit blade to Paul.
Damn.
Leftist media, am I right?
State-run media.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Jesus Christ.
Brooke X.
Christian Van Skeever.
Drew Applegate.
Brian Hopgood.
Jeremy Lowe.
Zach Connor.
Joe. Spooky Digital Ghost. Tierney.
Patreon _ donator comma yo.
Tom Whittem.
Alicia Grafe.
Andrew Jadzak pledges his grizzled empathy skills to unite Chad, Kevin, and Paul against a true enemy.
Tooth decay. Gum disease.
God damn that gingivitis. We'll end it one day.
Lord Cornwallis.
Carson Birkenbean.
Murph EP.
Tevin Ticklebean, the Chad Sworn.
Come on over.
You have a knight. Rusty Glenn.
Sean Minogue.
Wiggle it.
Luke LaFountain.
Chip Handsome.
Matt McClellan.
John Barber.
Jonas Blotterman.
Sarah Kemp.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Paul Grasso.
Clay McCarty.
Joe, regular name, Scott.
Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misodoulakis.
Parker Lee.
Alex Moon, the robotic dog.
Hamboat.
Matthew Sutton.
Flemily.
Raymond Hernandez.
The Crow Fence, but Vernal.
Ooh.
You know what I mean, Vern?
Jeffrey Owen Kahi.
Fucking nice. Luke Noodles.
Hugh Bolin.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Zam Bambino.
Russell Kasberg.
Chris Petrikis.
Scotty Pippen.
Javier Jimenez.
Dungeon Kappa.
Brendan Arafin.
Grand Moff Hamster awaits Emperor Kevin's command.
Yes. Brush your teeth. Lift up.
Stinklich.
Zach Weir.
Nathan Remick.
Tobias Clark.
Need More Kimchi.
Reed Steubendiek.
Andre Villanueva.
Joey Evans.
Carewise Gamgee.
Cameron Hansen.
Estamina, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Swaggy Yolo Squire wants you to know that I love you all. If anybody wants hugs, hit me up, Cowabunga.
Aw.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, Maggie.
Chris, otherworldly nightwear, hard on Nelson.
Generally depressing.
The Deadly Bulb.
Ben Bohan.
Diet Soda.
Kieran McNamara.
Coleman Laguza.
Jackie Ledoux.
Wham.
A pair of Scots.
Anthony pledges their blade to whoever releases a new episode of Paranoia Shop first. You're going to be waiting in a cave like that knight from Indiana Jones 3. It's never coming.
That is a blade gone to rust.
Yeah. You chose poorly, if I may say.
David Cray.
Levi Kidder.
Bryce Dury.
Calamity Carl.
Germ Juice.
Jonas Evan Voldson.
Matthew Brittato.
Carpson.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Nick Johnson.
Boney.
Dr. Diarrhea.
Stephen Day.
Nicholas Maloney.
Some of Chad's bird friends. We pledge our talons and sharpened beaks to Chad. Yes.
They made them sharper?
Yeah, they get sharper. You got calcium. Calcium beaks.
Burgers Crunchy PB. Parentheses. Yes, it is still edible. Do not check the expiration date. Close parentheses.
Peanut butter doesn't go bad, silly.
No, go.
Jeremy Bowser.
Ryan Carroll.
Dr. Eggdrop Soupman.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Thomas Jancis.
Lucretia McEvil.
Mutant Astronaut.
Ninja Bread Men.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Peanutberg Level 69.
Helodicus Frenchlin.
Henry Torbert.
Aaron Lord.
Adam Knapp.
Dr. Chocula pledges every claw and fang under his command to Paul.
Ooh, I hope that's a lot.
Brad Schmelzer.
Chick.
Logan Derby.
Moon Juice.
Floosh.
Caleb, Mr. Misfire West.
Mandy Nasty.
Skeletorin.
SSJ Trogador.
Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds.
Chicago Frank Returns.
Nate Bit G.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Ryan R. Davis.
Scott Wable.
Mr. Unimportant pledges his fake doctorate to whoever calls dibs dibs.
Dibs.
Damn, he's so fast.
We'll see in the edit, Kevin, who said it first.
I don't know. Kevin's teeth are really clean and words come off him fast. Josh Howell pledges his zealotry to whomever needs it most.
It's me. I need it.
It's me. I need zealotry. Rocco!
Evan Bowen.
Chris.
Sean Astin, master. Sean Astin masters the Gundam Death Scythe Hell Amber by 311 AMB. Yes.
Oh.
My man.
I had a cat named after that song.
It's been a while since we've had an update in the Sean Astin saga. So.
Yeah, I'm glad he's doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, one of the coolest deaths, one of the coolest Gundams you could possibly have. Good pick.
Greg Mustow.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Soggy Newspapers.
Allie Rose.
Hi, first time. Long time.
Saturn Video.
Sprinkle Buds.
Hilda B.
Serial Killer X.
Kiwi of Lerv.
Wade Norcross.
Kevin, your escaped monkeys are watching you and your monkey shines.
I don't know what that was. I don't know what I was going for there. I just tried something and I stuck with it.
Cool. Yep. I like it.
Thanks, man.
I like your follow through.
Thanks.
Benjamin Luther.
Kate the Great.
Kit Bush.
Mike Hart.
Lisets.
Sirison.
Dennis Wright.
Jover the Moon.
Edgar's Crassus.
Cameron Gansveld.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. Fidesen.
Hi.
Hey, Greg. Matt Septor.
Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Big Nick Lane.
Dom's Dirty Dong versus King Kong will be 3 hours long. Tonight at 11.
Whoa.
Well, I like that. That's amazing.
I kind of rapped there.
Yeah. Kieran and Brian are big fans.
I'm getting all the shout ones today. Soap.
That last name was my favorite.
Hey.
The Blade of the Goblin Grader is pledged to Chad Quant. Welcome aboard, Goblin.
Alpaca acquaintance, DDS, Department of Dope Stuff.
Blake, bad time having Kevin.
Jeff Webb is still a big baby, but we most sincerely appreciate your well wishes.
Kappa Kappa capital S.
Dan Antonio.
Turaku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink, doink. Philip. OG Quicksand Truther and Blade Pledger Hamel.
Spencer White.
CM.
Farah. Hurry.
Bjarndeer.
James Stavranos.
Jesse.
Chris Curdo.
Chris, the official Goosebuds Chronicler and Ledgerman Byers.
Cole Gleason.
It is official. I did dub Chris Brought Byers.
Yeah, Paul really did make that call. Mm-hmm.
On my own. It was a rogue call. Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
Tan Yorhide.
Greb Comics.
Kyle O'Neill.
Goon Cahoots.
Robert Holden. This is an insult.
What? Babette's Feces.
It's Babette's Feces. It's a movie that Kevin and I love, and you've defiled it.
What movie do you guys would watch that's called Babette's Feces?
It's called Babette's Feast. Now I'm mad. But the full force of my blades is now coming down on Babette's Feces.
I appreciate your support, but... Damn.
That's a good Letterboxd comment. You should go on Letterboxd. Follow me on Letterboxd.
Yo, if you leave that as the Letterboxd review, you're going to get likes.
Adam Brundell.
Anthony Stoker.
Brony underscore Danza.
Okay, this one always breaks my brain. Doglips underscore Kajoyian?
I think you got it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Gunnar Toland.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone pledges the Holy Blade of Justice to Paul.
Well, that's Ooh. It. It's over. I've got the Holy Blade, so.
Take that, gingivitis. Brandon Nichols.
Max.
Smelodies.
Zendane.
Crank 2. High Voltage.
Funny.
aka Cyberbully.
Paul Sentient, my buddy doll.
Oh no.
Deep cut.
Blarvin, hungry for some crazy bones.
Yum yum yum. Bacon.
Bosferatu.
Brian Udap.
Lumo Nuva.
Logan Kilgus.
Munch Squad.
Starship 9.
And now, welcoming to the Book of Names, a new name. Bobby of the Eastwood, Unlocker of Worlds.
That's a big title. Welcome, Caleb Snyder, Grand Master of Spells and Enchantments that pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
That's what happens when you get a holy blade pledged to you.
Brian Storo.
Hello and hi, crafty Stitch Witch.
And hello, proper spaceman.
Oh, it's a proper spaceman, isn't it?
Thank you all so very, very much. We love you. Goodbye.
Thanks. Thanks, mates.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Brush your teeth.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.